When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Gaia.com, the on-demand streaming TV service that helps you achieve your highest potential at your convenience. To get your first month at only 99 cents, visit gaia.com/my7chakras. My 7 Chakras, episode 228.
The visible body just happens to be where the wave function of the organism is most dense. Invisible quantum waves are spreading out from each of us and permeating into all other organisms. At the same time, each of us has the waves of every other organism entangled within our own makeup.
The 7 chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My 7 Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, founder of and the voice behind My 7 Chakras, the show where we dive deep into the ancient world to uncover nuggets of wisdom that will help you find your life's purpose. So if you have deep-rooted questions about the mysteries of the universe and the mysteries within you, then you are at the right spot. Now, before we move on, I've got a quick announcement to make. Have you downloaded the My 7 Chakras reading list yet? If not, make sure you check it out. I know that many of you listen to the show while in transit, while you're traveling. So it becomes hard to keep note of all the amazing books shared on air. So I decided to put it all together for you in a convenient PDF that you can download and print as well. To download the 21 must-read spiritual reading list, all you have to do is visit our website, my7chakras.com/reading list. That's my7chakras.com/reading list. And if you feel there's a book that needs to be on that list, let me know via Facebook or email. My ID, as always, is aj@my7chakras.com. That's aj@my7chakras.com. And with that out of the way, it's time to bring you our featured guest for today, Kyle Davis. So Kyle, are you ready to inspire?
I sure am, AJ. Thanks for having me on. It's absolutely great to be here.
Awesome. So Kyle Davis is a chartered psychologist, therapist, coach, speaker, and author. He is the creator of Energy Flow Coaching, a mind-body approach to help people achieve optimum well-being and experience greater personal freedom. He has spent the last 15 years helping sufferers of chronic health challenges such as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, depression, and anxiety recover their health and lead fulfilled lives. So Kyle, thank you so much for joining me today. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
That sounds amazing, doesn't it? All those things that I do, I just hope I live up to that.
Well, absolutely.
The things I say today.
And our listeners are sure that you're going to deliver some valuable nuggets for them to be able to take action. But let's start with some inspiration. My question is, what is your favorite inspirational quote and how does that apply in your life?
Okay, so this is my quote, and you'll have to let me know whether you think this is inspirational. It's a quote from an author called Mai Wan in her book, The Rainbow and the Worm, The Physics of Organisms. And it says, "The visible body just happens to be where the wave function of the organism is most dense. Invisible quantum waves are spreading out from each of us and permeating into all other organisms. At the same time, each of us has the waves of every other organism entangled within our own makeup." And that the reason I guess that sort of inspires me is it inspires my work, and it's that notion that we're all connected. And even though we can't see that, and very often we don't feel it, we are. And allowing ourselves to entertain that idea and be in that space, I think is a useful place to start. That we are, as Deepak Chopra said, we're waves on an ocean, which is probably another great inspirational quote. And we can see ourselves as individuals, yet still connected to each other.
Wonderful. I love that quote. It's a beautiful quote because it says that we are all connected in ways that we can't quite explain, but we have these magical moments where we seem like we're more and more connected each day. And that's what we speak a lot about during our show as we get in touch with our spiritual side, but as well as our mental, physical, and emotional side, which are all intertwined, interconnected. And that's something we're going to learn more about today. So thanks for sharing that really profound quote with us, Kyle. And with that, let's dive in. My question is, what made you name your new book, The Intelligent Body?
Oh, wow. That's a good question to start, isn't it? And thanks for getting straight in there with the book. So I don't have to plug it because you're already doing it.
Of course.
I think this is my sense of it, is that I feel as a culture, most certainly in the West, and I guess you could tell us what it's a little bit how different it is in Asia, but certainly in the West, we're very thinking orientated, and we have this sense that even without really thinking about it, my sense is that our default stance, our default position on almost everything is to think about everything and to run everything through our thinking brain. And there's this idea that our thinking brain controls everything, controls the body and all of our life. And it's all about the brain. And this is in, I don't know, the last 20 years, it seems to be more popular. Neuroscience is getting bigger and bigger. And whilst there are some fantastic, you know, ideas, and, you know, science does some amazing things, my sense is that there's an intelligence within our body, and we neglect that at our peril. So an awful lot of my work is inviting people to get back into their body and to feel and to begin to believe that there's a wisdom, an innate wisdom that permeates the entire body and probably beyond it as well, as we heard, you know, in that quote. So rather than allowing ourselves to fixate in our mind, in our thinking brain, and assume that intelligent activity resides solely in the brain, I think it's important for us to look at there being intelligence within the body. So because that's a huge thrust of my work, that was the thought behind titling the book, The Intelligent Body.
Wonderful. So thanks a lot for sharing that. Like you mentioned, we are very thinking oriented, and that's not just in the West. I think all top cities these days, whether it's in Japan or Australia or India, for example, Mumbai, because it's such a, you know, metropolitan city, there's so much business going around, people have to think fast on their feet, and they don't really have time, so to speak. And we're always thinking and thinking and thinking. And your suggestion is to realize that intelligence is not just located within the brain, but it's in our body. And that seems to be the missing link. So could you Help us understand a bit further, how exactly are the mind and body connected?
Well, that's a very good question. And just taking a step back from that is this idea that the mind and body are separate came from really what was a worldview assumption. So rather than it being something factual, it was a way of looking at the world. So it probably goes back to the time of Aristotle. But the person that made the idea of a mind-body split very popular was René Descartes. And at the time, this was early science, and what they were looking to do was obviously explain life. And there was a sense that, well, if we look at animals, they're kind of like machines, and the human body is, well, that's kind of like a machine as well. We can break it apart into separate bits of arms and legs and things like that. But because they were Christian, they and believed that man was made in God's image and man had a soul, there needed to be something that was distinctly different. There needed to be this part of man that connected him with God. So this was soul, and soul and mind were kind of the same thing, really. So this is why we had the mind-body split, because the body was this thing that could be split apart, but the soul could never be split apart. It's sort of ethereal, really. And that is where that originated from, certainly as we see it today. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it was what they were trying to do, as we do in every age, is we try to make sense of life. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of, for me, what's interesting about it is in the hundreds of years since, science has tried to remove God from the equation altogether. So what we've been left with is, whereas you go back to kind of Aristotle and Plato and up to Descartes, and the word psyche meant something spiritual, it connected to soul, and mind somehow had that connection with soul as well. As we come up through the ages and God being removed, then the mind is this kind of nebulous thing, and and if we look at it now, it's actually you couldn't define it, really. There is no agreed idea of what mind is, where mind begins and ends. But what we're left with as your average man in the street is that, well, the mind and body are separate, aren't they? And the thing that I experience is that even though people sometimes say to me, or very often say to me, that they believe that the mind and body are not separate, when it comes to looking at life, looking at health, looking at maybe if they've got symptoms, because obviously I work with a lot of people with health problems, they still will say, oh yeah, but if you're talking about stress or emotion, that's all in my mind, isn't it? How does that relate to physical symptoms? So coming back to your question of, right, well, how are they linked? I think stress is probably the best way of talking about how the mind and body are one, or the brain and body are one. And the way of doing that is when we can understand that there's a stress response within the body and the brain. And the stress response in the body and brain is exactly the same regardless of whether you have an emotional buildup, whether you have some sort of infection, or whether you have an injury. So you could have a car accident, you could have a bad case of flu, or you could lose a job, and the stress response triggered in the body is exactly the same. So for me, that really begins to show that we're one interconnected flowing system. The idea that the brain is separate somehow, or the body is separate, or there's this mind bit that's separate, it is just not useful. And especially when it comes to health, I think it's not useful. I think it's very important that we see ourselves as one flowing system, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And love that you said that a lot of people have this question about where does the mind begin and where does it end. That's a question that everyone seems perplexed at it. But like you mentioned, the stress response within the body is same, Action Tribe, whether it is a physical injury or a flu or an emotional outbreak. The stress response within the body is pretty much the same. And so, Kyle, could you help us understand the difference between an emotion and a thought? because that is something a lot of people have in their minds. They are not able to differentiate between the two. Because you would assume that an emotion starts.
So this is interesting, isn't it? I think all of this stuff is really interesting, because one of the difficulties we face with this sort of work in this field is the fact that people define things in different ways, and people have their own sort of preconceived ideas about what things mean. Now, the word thought means a variety of different things to a variety of people. You have some people that will say that thought is a flow of energy that exists outside of the body. You get some people that say, well, thought is something conscious within your brain. My sense of it is that in debating these things, it's as long as we agree on what we're talking about, we have a starting point. I tend to prefer to look at thoughts and thinking as being something that's sort of conscious. So it may be just outside of our awareness or our conscious awareness, but generally, so you know, you can often find that there's a white noise of hazy thought that we're not quite aware of, but it's sort of there. And then you obviously have conscious thoughts that you are aware of. So I prefer to define thinking, you know, thought in a reasonably tight way like that. When we get into all the kind of unconscious stuff, I wonder whether that's something a bit different. So that's thought. Now, that's thought from my perspective. Now, how is thought different from emotion? Well, one thing we know from neuroscience now is that our cognitive processing is slower than our emotional processing. So basically, all of our emotions affect all of our thoughts. So it's a very complex picture, because we all know that we can think about things and have emotions as well. But to begin with, the texture and colouring, if you will, of your thinking is largely influenced by your emotion. Now, emotion and feeling are slightly different. I often talk about our emotional feelings, lumping them together. But neuroscience is telling us that they are a little bit different. The structures involved in the production of them are a little bit different. So emotion is a non-conscious process that involves basically all of your body. So we have neurons in our heart and in our gut. And this is the idea of a gut feeling, is literally intelligent activity within your gut. So we know that there's this flow of information throughout body and brain. But to begin with, when emotion is triggered, it's a non-conscious process. So the gut could be involved, the heart could be involved, and the non-thinking part of the brain. That then floods through and affects the thinking part of the brain. So when emotion is then triggered, what's supposed to happen is almost immediately we have feelings. So, you know, most people are aware of, if there's a feeling of anger in their body, they feel as a tightness, say, or something heavy, or, you know, a clenching or a constricting feeling. And people are kind of, are aware of that. But the emotion triggers that feeling. It's also possible for us to suppress our feelings, where we get to the point where we don't actually feel them. And this is what an awful lot of my work is about, is that even though we know we're able to redirect our attention away from feeling and almost stop feelings or certain feelings, it doesn't stop our emotions being produced. So emotions are always there underneath and will always affect our thinking. So much of my work is based on the idea that a lot of our thinking, I think there is an energy to life. You know, part of this, you know, go back to this quote from Deepak, that we're waves on an ocean. There is an energy to life, and I think that can affect our thinking as well. So there's energy that comes outside of us and comes into us. But our emotion and that energy of life, generally, in my mind, is what results in our thinking. I'm not convinced that we can particularly affect our thinking. And much of my work is about, based on the idea that, right, well, what we need to do is get into the body and feel and respond to our emotion rather than trying to to change our thinking. And I know that, you know, a lot of people don't like that idea because we've had many years of this, you know, and there's a whole field, there's an industry based on the idea of change your thinking, change your life.
Right.
But for me, whilst there can be some benefits in the short term, and I think short-lived benefits of changing one's thinking, my sense is that it's not the most effective way either of improving your health, improving your well-being, but also crucially of releasing your potential or living your potential. My sense is that if we really want to unleash all of who we can be, we've got to go beyond the thinking brain. We've got to tap into what I would call our true self, which is this wisdom throughout our body and brain and beyond. So it's something beyond thinking. And my sense is that if we get caught up in trying to change our thinking for some short-term gain, then ultimately we're probably restricting ourselves. So when I started out, my first therapy clinic I opened in 1999, and I'd done a whole host of different types of trainings, and I was very much a cognitive based practitioner. So sure. You know, I was my focus was on, you know, getting in people's thinking and changing their thinking and moving their words and their pictures around in their head and all that sort of stuff. And what I found, my experience of it was that people were getting really frustrated. If they got any benefit, it didn't seem to last, and it was just really, really hard work. So that was when I began to move my work more to a body-centered place and started to look at the role of emotion. And it was working with people with things like fibromyalgia, CFS, adrenal fatigue, irritable bowel syndrome, because a lot of those sufferers had been offered cognitive behavioral therapy as part of their package of treatment. And for the most part, none of them got better. But when they started working with myself and my colleagues, they were getting better. And we were saying, yeah, but we're working on our feelings, our emotions, but we're not working on thinking. So there's got to be something in this. There's got to be something wrong with that model that suggests that thinking leads to emotional feelings. And then that's when we began to see from science that in actual fact, yes, it is the case that our emotional processing is much, much faster and therefore influences everything that we think about. So that's a very protracted answer to your question, but I guess it's at the heart of my work. And I think it's a pertinent question because a lot of people are still stuck in that, in my view, stuck in that mode of thinking, and I need tools and techniques to change my thinking. And I'm saying, okay, well, you may get a short-term gain from that, but I think in terms of really long-term health and unleashing all of your potentials, we need to transcend that those techniques of altering thinking patterns. But I know there'll be a lot of people out there that will just say I'm talking nonsense.
Well, Action Tribe, and thanks a lot for sharing that answer. I loved your response, first of all, Kyle. Action Tribe, cognitive processing is slower than emotional processing, which means that your emotions affect your thoughts. Emotion is a non-conscious process because it can get triggered in the gut or the heart away from the brain. Those organs can be involved, and those trigger feelings. And sometimes we suppress our feelings, which is a challenge. But when you share that, Kyle, when you share your response, what came to my mind was what Tony Robbins said, and he mentioned that if you want to change the way you're thinking, don't just focus on the thoughts, focus on the way you are using your body, change the way you're moving, and that will affect your thinking. And that's an easier and more effective way of going about things. So since we're on the topic of emotion, could you talk to us about the role that our emotions play on our overall health?
No, from my perspective, our emotion is absolutely huge. I think that, you know, if we go back to what we were talking about earlier about stress, and I'm saying that stress can be triggered by, you know, by a whole host of things. Mm-hmm. The way I look at it in terms of the way I work with my clients is a very, very simple idea that we have a stress bucket inside. And when our stress bucket gets full, our body begins to send some form of symptom. And we know that's kind of true because our autonomic nervous system can become overactive. our endocrine system, our immune system. So all they can all go a bit wrong, and they tend to go a bit wrong when the body is in a perpetual state of stress. Now, I think, you know, we kind of talked earlier about a bad case of flu or a car accident, but they tend to be one-offs and people tend to know when they happen. Whereas what often happens, and it can happen through trauma or it can just happen through trying to fit in with life, is that we can very easily develop a pattern of blocking our emotional feelings. And a kind of example of this is that there's a great book I read years ago, which is called Healing Without Prozac and Freud, by a psychiatrist, I think he's called Dr. David Servan-Schreiber. And in his book, he describes an experiment that he was doing, looking at emotion in the brain and body. And what he was doing was showing people disturbing films. And while he was doing that, he was measuring their heart rate, the blood pressure, and the activity of the emotional part of the brain. And he had this one lady in, and he said, as she was watching this film, she was, her heart rate was really high, and a kind of a blood pressure was getting higher, and there was a huge amount of activity within her brain. And he's thinking, oh my God, this woman is really, really stressed. I'm going to have to go and check she's all right. So he goes into the lab and he says, are you okay? Shall I turn this off? And she looks at him with this element of surprise on her face. And she says, oh, I feel perfectly fine. I'm quite happy watching this. And he was sort of shocked, because he's thinking, my God, but all of these metrics are showing that your body and brain are in a state of stress, but you're not aware of that. So that's, for me, you know, he was saying, well, obviously that's possible to happen, so that's probably somebody who's not in touch. I would say that's potentially somebody that could get ill, because when we don't feel our emotional feelings, basically our stress bucket gets full, and when our stress bucket is full, then we have some form of symptom. It could be anxiety, it could be depression, it could be back pain, it could be migraines, it could be chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. So I work with kind of all of those, that range of health problems, and it's based on that very simple idea that our stress bucket is full. Now, yes, if we have a bad diet, or if we drink too much, or if we don't sleep right, and all these sorts of things, they go in the stress bucket as well. But I think they're a reasonably easy fix. You know, people kind of know if that stuff is happening. And the thing is, you can sort out your diet, you can sleep well, you can be exercising, and you can still be really, really ill. And that's generally what I found over the years, is that I guess because my work is new, is that people tend to have tried pretty much everything else before they see me. And it's often the case that people have they've sorted out their diet, they've cut out loads of things, they're taking extra tablets and potions and whatnot to try to boost their energy and immune system, all these sorts of things, and they may be exercising if they can, but they're still unwell. And it's only when we get into that massive part, which is our emotional feelings and how they get suppressed, that they really begin to kind of take shape and get well again. So that, I think the link is absolutely massive. I think that, you know, certainly when I was at uni 30 years ago, emotion was not something we did. And I think one of the things is, I think it slipped between the net, really, because I think when it's come to medicine, because it's not something you can easily measure, medicine has not been interested, because that's it, that looks at the body as a machine still. And when it comes then to psychology, that initially wanted to look at behavior, and then it wanted to look at thinking processes. So again, emotion was sort of pushed around, not really dealt with. So there are theories about it within academia, but it's only recently, really, that people are starting to take an interest and look at emotion, its effect on stress, and how that affects health. And I think, you know, it seems to be increasing interest in the role of trauma on health now. And there was a huge piece of research done some years ago where they, and I can't think of the name of the researcher, but there were literally thousands and thousands of people that went through this study. But it tracked through trauma from childhood and looked at chronic health problems in older life. And it found that basically everyone that had a health problem, you know, at some point later in their life had a degree of trauma early in their life. So they called these adverse childhood experiences, and they kind of rated them, and you know, and if you had sort of four ACEs, as they called them, there was a certain type of health problem you'd have, and if you had more, then you'd be looking at cancers and heart disease and these sorts of things. And whilst it's not saying exclusively that trauma and therefore emotional stress is the single and only cause of these things, because it isn't, because I think we have to get away from that idea that there's a single cause of things, because obviously I think when it comes to health problems, it's a very complex picture. But when we're looking at trauma, when we're looking at our emotion, because usually what happens is if we start blocking emotion when we're younger, the pattern of blocking emotion continues. So going back to that lady in that experiment where she wasn't aware of how she felt, there's every chance that at some point earlier in her life, she would have learned to block those emotional feelings, and she's still doing it. And I think that's the kind of essence of my work, is that it's that tricky thing of people don't realize they're doing it. And it's only when it's almost like it's too late that they begin to have some sort of health challenge that then we'd have to look at, all right, well, yeah, there's patterns. You've got behavioral patterns, patterns of the way you are with yourself, the relationship you have with yourself, that is resulting in the blockage of that energy of you, which is your emotional flow. So in my mind, our emotion, and I think we're going to see this more and more over the next kind of 5 years and 10 years, I think we're at that stage at the moment, and I've been seeing changes this year, but over the last few years, it seemed to me that people have wanted to believe that our nutrition is the thing that causes all health issues, and if you can sort that out, you can basically sort anything out. Of course, what I've seen over the last 15 years is that simply isn't the case, because people have got that bit kind of dialed down. You know, they've got their diet absolutely sorted. So nutrition and exercise, whilst being kind of key pillars to health, they absolutely are not the sole pillars. And I think what we're going to see, as I say, there seems to be increasing interest in the role that our emotional feelings and stress play in overall health.
Got it. So what I'm getting is sometimes through childhood, people get used to blocking their feelings, blocking their emotions. And over a period of time, it becomes a new normal for them in such a way, like the example that you shared, they don't even realize that they might have a level of stress. Now, many of our listeners are busy people. They've got families to manage, they've got a job, and they travel a lot. And at the same time, they want to ensure that they are on top of things health-wise. But many of our listeners feel fatigued at the end of the day or towards the end of the day. So help me understand, what's the difference between fatigue and chronic fatigue?
I think that we all have a healthy tiredness. And I think there's a difference between a healthy tiredness and a groggy fatigue symptom. Now, most people have probably had a mild groggy fatigue symptom. So if they've been somewhere and they've been maybe particularly bored or dejected or unfulfilled, so if you're a listener and you are in a job that you really dislike, there may be certain points that you've had on certain days when you felt pretty much exhausted, and the chances are that that's not a healthy tiredness, that's probably an emotional symptom of fatigue. So I think that we've all had the experience of what I would say is a symptom of fatigue. When it comes to chronic fatigue syndrome, essentially the brain becomes overactive. So the immune system, the autonomic nervous system, and the endocrine system are dysfunctional, essentially, as I was saying earlier. And as a result of that, what it means is that the body is working incredibly hard to try to restore balance. And because it's working incredibly hard, it means that everything is amped up. So, you know, if I have a person with a food intolerance, say, when they have chronic fatigue syndrome, that what they will experience is 100 times worse. So if you take a person who is healthy, but they know what a groggy symptom fatigue is like. Somebody with chronic fatigue syndrome will have that symptom times 10, so they'll be completely and utterly wiped out. And essentially what happens is the body and brain get to a point, as I say, where the brain, certain areas of the brain, of the midbrain, become overactive, really. And as I say, that leads to that chain reaction within the immune system and whatnot, and then people have symptoms. So chronic fatigue syndrome, again, is a whole range of symptoms. It's not just fatigue.
Got it. So I love that you made a distinction between the healthy tiredness that people might experience versus the emotionally stimulated fatigue. And you sort of spoke about one of the causes for what this for this sort of fatigue is. Maybe a person is not doing a job that he or she likes. So there are trigger points that this person experiences maybe throughout the week that lead to chronic fatigue. But any other causes for chronic fatigue? Any other situations in which a person might experience?
I suppose it depends. If you are talking about chronic fatigue syndrome, as in the health challenge, or whether you're just talking about somebody that is very tired and has low, you know, because if you talk about chronic fatigue syndrome, as I say, I feel that it's a body that's in a state of perpetual stress. Now, yeah. I think the biggest cause of that full stress bucket is our emotional stress, you know, all those emotions that have got stuck. But there will be, it's almost like I look at it like a combination lock of causes, that there's not a single cause, there's a number of causes. Our genes or natural wiring will play a role. As I say, there will be other factors like diet and these sorts of things which play a role as well. So I think that there are probably a number of causes, and I think that's the same to any chronic health problem. There are a number of causes. Obviously, because of the type of work I do, I'm looking at things from a certain perspective, and I recognize that. But my, you know, you can't be an expert in absolutely everything as well. But, you know, I find that when people work with me, they get either completely well or almost there. And when we look at what are the conventional approaches to treating chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, adrenal fatigue, these sorts of things, well, there aren't really any, you know, there aren't any mainstream ways of dealing with these. It's usually they're offered some form of drugs, be it painkillers, be it sleeping tablets and whatnot. So people are generally told that if they have one of these issues, that it's going to stay with them. I'm moving away from your question there. Which I can't remember what it was. AJ, bring me back to the question.
I'm trying to think in terms of the listener over here. So for example, the listener might have stress, chronic fatigue syndrome, might not be able to sort of resonate with it. So you said that, you know, a person who is doing a job that he or she does not like, that could be one situation in which a person has chronic fatigue. But I just wanted to know any other situations, any other causes that might lead to chronic fatigue.
I think I probably need to take a step back and give a bit more theory on this one, because my work is based on the idea that we're kind of creating our experience. Our emotional experience largely comes from inside of us. And even though I was saying earlier that there is an energy of life, there's a flow of life, so we pick up on the energy of life. However, in saying that, much of our emotional experience, the majority of our emotional experience, is coming from inside of us. Part of it is our natural wiring. Part of it is the meaning that we imprint upon life. Part of it is the way that we interact with life on a daily basis. So emotion is feedback to a certain extent about our you know, the things that we're doing, the way we interact with life. So I think it's important that we take that position where we believe that my feeling experience is something that arises within me. It's not that life causes me to feel certain things. And, you know, that's generally how most people see it, is that, you know, it's my job that makes me stressed. My boss makes me angry. And I'd say it isn't, it's not that it's like that. It's that this vibrationally exists already within you. Mm-hmm. And it may well be that if you think your boss is making you angry, it may well be that there's something about your energy, the you know, going back to the quote at the start, the vibrations that you're kind of putting out there that is pulling in something that is then resonating and triggering anger. So ultimately, our emotion is really all about us. And I think that's the important thing. And it's what leads to problems is that when we bury that emotion, and we often do that by either just pushing it down or by blaming the context. So if I were to blame my boss and say, my boss is just an asshole, you know, I just don't like him, he makes me angry, then I'm disempowered. I'm not responding to that emotional feeling as if it's mine. Whereas really I need to be in that space of, this emotion is about me. There's something about whatever's going on here that I'm attracting, and it's resonating because that's where I'm vibrating. So if I'm believing that if I think that my boss has made me angry and he's treating me badly, then there's something about my resonance, my vibration, rather than it's not about him, it's about me. So I think it's really important to, you know, to kind of, I think, be clear about that, because we are very much stuck in an outside in idea of life, that life happens to me. And I don't think that's how it works. My sense of it is that, you know, life is it's not that there's a single reality. It's our reality is kind of constantly shifting. And it depends largely upon our level of vibration, our resonance. And that affects the feelings that we have. So really our journey is all about us. It's all about coming back to us. So that's why I'm just a little bit cautious about saying, oh yeah, but if you have a job you hate, or if you have a boss that treats you badly, that's going to mean you'll be fatigued or whatever. It's ultimately the bottom line with it is, when we suppress or depress or bury our true self and the energy flow that is us and our emotional feelings, ultimately our body responds by sending us symptoms. And this is one of the kind of other ideas is that, you know, in my work is that when our body sends the symptoms, it's not that they're bad, evil invaders that we need to kind of get rid of as quickly as possible. Symptoms are really a tap on the shoulder from our body to say, your emotion is blocked, your true self, your truth is blocked, your energy flow is blocked, and you need to do something about that. You need to look inside. We may need help to look inside, but it's about coming back to you. Again, when it comes to healthcare, we tend to, understandably, we want symptoms to be gone as quickly as possible. But in our mechanistic view of symptoms, we tend to look at them as being something that is happening to me. So it's all, again, part of that outside-in notion that this is happening to me, I've got this disease, this condition, rather than the fact that... And then we often go to our doctor for some pills or potions to try to suppress the symptoms, and a huge amount of healthcare is about trying to work on symptoms. It's really, I would say, well... Our symptom, when we experience a symptom of any sort, it's a messenger. You know, in the same way as if you're walking down the road and a stone pops in your shoe, you feel a symptom of pain. The pain is a messenger to let you know there's a stone in your shoe that you probably need to take out of your shoe. And even though that seems a bit simple, I would say the majority of symptoms of health conditions are exactly the same, in as much as it's your body, intelligent body, trying to get your attention to have you pay attention to what it is you may be missing, to some blockage of yourself or some blockage of your emotional flow.
Wonderful. So thanks a lot for giving us that perspective, Kyle. Now, they say that the body is a chemistry lab, right? So could you help us understand what's happening chemically in the body when we're stressed, in terms of the different hormones and how they affect our emotions?
I probably could. How useful is it for us to how useful is it for us to know that, do you think? Or is it more useful for us to be aware of the physical sensations that are taking place and to pay attention to those in order that we can do something?
I just wanted to get that perspective as well. You know, I completely understand that it's the sensations and the response, but then, you know, sometimes it would help, right? Getting to know the chemical side of things so we know what's happening within our body.
So adrenaline, noradrenaline are the main steroid hormones, I suppose, that get triggered in our stress response.
Okay.
They're triggered through what is called the HPA axis, which is the hypothalamus gland, the pituitary gland, and the adrenal glands. The hypothalamus and the pituitary are in the brain. The adrenals sit on top of the kidneys. So the HPA axis is absolutely crucial when it comes to stress, the stress response. And what happens mm-hmm. is when the stress response gets sort of stuck on is the HPA axis is in overdrive. And that's what I was kind of talking about earlier. So chemically, adrenaline and noradrenaline are the key things. I mean, there's a lot that goes on, isn't there? And it's a very complex picture there. But I think, crucially, it's the HPA axis that is triggered into a sort of overdrive that's what's taking place in brain and body when the stress response is stuck on. And essentially I'm my theory is that and the theory of many others or increasing people is that when the stress response remains stuck on, then symptoms ensue because the body begins to essentially break down, because stress is an internal battle. When the stress response is on, the body with its tendency to self-correct and self-heal is always trying to maintain balance. It's trying to come back to its default setting. So stress is this battle where the body is trying to come back to its default setting. And if it perceives that there's a stressor, that can be something, you know, outside of the body or inside. When there's a perceived stressor, the body is kind of fighting to get rid of that. And as I say, when then, if the body believes that that stressor is still there, the stress response can get stuck on. The HPA axis is in overdrive, and then we have all these health problems that people are experiencing these days.
Wonderful. Well, thanks a lot for providing that perspective, Kyle. I know that, you know, this topic can get really complex very soon, but I really wanted to get our listeners or provide our listeners access to different views. So, for example, today we've covered the emotional side, the mental side, as well as the chemical side. So thanks a lot for sharing that, the information about the HPA axis, and I'm sure many of our listeners will do some more research about this just to find some enhance their knowledge base in this area. Now let's talk about the solution. Now, how does someone go about healing these chronic symptoms? For someone listening to this episode who associates with chronic stress or chronic stress syndrome, what's the solution?
I think that there's a couple of crucial pieces. I think to start with, it's as we talked at the start of the show, if we can appreciate that mind and body are one, I think that's very useful. My sense of it is that intuitively, people often know if they have a symptom, what it is. And I think that, it's almost like, just to give an example, if somebody has a bad head at the end of a frustrating day at work, I think that often that person will know that I've felt frustrated and I've kind of maybe I've blocked up that frustration and now I've got this bad head. What often happens, I think, then is that if that headache persists for a week or 2 weeks or gets worse, that person sort of stops trusting themselves and the idea that, well, actually, it's probably the same problem is present. They then think it's something else, something that's happening to them. And of course, often they'll go to a doctor then, and the doctor will usually give them some meds for that to try to treat the symptom. So I would say a first step is as well as seeking, you know, seeking external advice from a medical practitioner, is do trust yourself as well. I think it's important for all of us to get in touch with our emotional feelings. And, you know, for me, our emotional feelings are they're feedback. Like I was saying earlier about, you know, you have pain when a stone pops in your shoe. Our emotional feedback, our emotional feelings are feedback, just like hunger is a feeling, a rumbling sensation in your stomach. For hunger is feedback. You know, if you need the bathroom, you have a sensation and you know you need to use the bathroom. You know, if you're tired, you have the same, a healthy tiredness. Again, it's a feedback tool. So our emotion is the same. A lot of the time, people, I think, get caught in this thing that emotion is something you've got to talk about, and it's something that gets built up in the past. Whereas my Sure. sense is that we need to move beyond that. We need to recognize that actually, my emotion, whatever I feel today, is just trying to give me a nudge. It's trying to help me navigate through life. And it's not that I necessarily need to talk about my feelings. What I need to do is pay attention and recognize that in this moment, my feelings are a reflection of me. They may be a reflection of what I want or what I don't want. So I need to pay attention to them. And that, I would say, is the first bit. My sense is that if we taught our kids in schools to pay more attention to their feelings, to trust their feelings, as much as we taught them to develop their memories and their thinking skills, then I think our health crisis would be far less than it currently is. But as I say, you know, saying at the start of the show, we from kids upwards, we have this tendency to focus on teaching them how to remember facts. You know, we don't teach them to trust themselves. We don't, you know, we try to teach them to fit in. So we don't teach them to be themselves particularly. So, even though it sounds incredibly simple and incredibly straightforward, we all have a tendency to try to get on, to try to fit in, to try to be liked, to try to do the right thing, to try to normalize our feelings. Oh my God, am I okay feeling this? I don't want to be the kind of person that feels this. I shouldn't feel this. We naturally tend to resist our emotional feelings. We push them down. We suppress them. We allow, and as I was saying earlier, our emotion triggers our thinking, so we tend to get stuck in thought patterns about how we feel, where we try to find meaning, we try to analyze, we try to resolve our feelings with thought. So it's, you know, what I would say is at a basic step one is to simplify life, is to allow life to be simple and believe that everything I feel is okay. I'm just going to let myself feel whatever I feel. And if I feel I need to take some action on these feelings, if I believe my feelings are pulling me in a certain, you know, in a certain space or down a certain avenue, then I'll take those steps. Or if not, if I'm not sure, then I'll just let myself feel. I'll allow these feelings to flow through me. And that is actually much harder to do than it sounds. But that's definitely, I would say, you know, for anyone with any health issue, it's always a good starting point. You know, if you want to get, I think if you want to unleash all of who you are and unleash your potential, you need to be in touch with who you are. And who you are, a big part of who you are is those deeper feelings that you have. So allowing yourself to pay attention to those feelings without trying to solve them, I'd say is definitely a good first step.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing. Action Tribe, to access the show notes for today's episode, visit our website, my7chakras.com/228. That's my7chakras.com/228. And before moving on, a word from our sponsor, Gaia.com.
Explore the vast traditions of yoga with the Gaia original series Yogic Paths. Filmed across India, the 13-episode series captures the beauty of mystical Indian landscapes and never-before-seen ashrams while taking the viewer on a journey through the many traditions of yoga. While the practice of physical postures, called asanas, is most well-known in the West, understanding the full scope of this rich and varied tradition gives meaning and power to the yoga that we know today. Action Tribe, since you're listening to this show, it's clear that you are interested in topics such as chakras, yoga, and self-realization, and you know exactly where to go for audio content and interviews. And I sure hope you feel this way about our show, My Seven Chakras. But where do you go if you want a streaming TV video service with the same values and similar content? The answer is Gaia.com. To start watching this show, The Yogic Paths, as well as get your first month at Gaia for just 99 cents, visit Gaia.com/My7Chakras. That's Gaia.com/My7Chakras.
Stand up to your obstacles and do something about them. You will find that they haven't half the strength you think they have. This is an amazing quote by Norman Vincent Peale, Action Tribe. Sometimes in life, when the challenges appear stronger than you, you just have to stand up and show up. You need to express your courage and inner ferocity and really do something about them. Just pretending like everything is okay will not make the issue go away. In fact, just building up the emotions or feelings is not even healthy for you, as we're learning today. You just need to look at the challenge, accept that it is there in your life for a reason, and actively find out what you can do about it. What action can you take that might help with overcoming the challenge? Sometimes even a single step in the right direction can help build momentum that will ultimately lead to an avalanche. So don't underestimate the power that resides within you, and remember that you are stronger than your challenges. So Kyle, could you talk to us about one major life challenge that you had to go through in your life? What was that experience like, and what did you learn from that life challenge that you went through?
Wow, life challenges. It's funny, really, because it's difficult to pick out one, because life is a series of challenges. I think one of the challenges, I think we have life lessons, and I think we come in, we're spiritual beings having this experience on this planet, and it's a bit brutal, it's a bit crazy. And I think we have lessons, and I think history repeats itself in our lives until we learn the lessons. And I'm saying in a loose sense. A challenge for me has been that when I was a boy, my mother would say to me, "People take advantage of you." And I would say, whatever. And then I found that I would increasingly have problems. And I was the sort of person that if you asked me a favor, I would immediately say yes. And then at some point later, I'd be agitated. And I realized that this was beginning to my kind of niceness, my desire to please others, my desire to make sure everyone else was okay, was allowing others to take advantage of me, and this was having a variety of bad effects on me. And I had to, I guess I had the realization that this was happening, that my mother was right, and I had the realization as well. And I guess having, I did some research and information was shared with me, and it became apparent to me that this was a life lesson challenge for me, that I needed to be able to kind of define myself, really, and to know when it was right to do something or to help people, when it was right to create a boundary and to say no. And that it was a huge challenge, because I think because we have this idea about who we are, and this is one of the things I find is really interesting, is that this, I don't know whether it's ego, whether it's part of the mind, whether it's the thinking brain, whatever it is, but there's a part that sort of looks back and based on our behavior, based on what we've done, makes an assumption about who we are, and it projects this out into the future. And for me, it was the realization that actually I'm probably not who I think I am. And I'm going to have to take some steps to do some things that are uncomfortable here. And in doing that, in feeling that discomfort, I'm probably being truer to who I really am. I also, so from that point, I then had, you know, had this sense that actually I'm going to stop trying to define myself, and I'm going to be aware that if I am defining myself, it's probably wrong. So I'm going to be in this space where I believe that I'm far more expansive than I can ever define, and recognize that if I'm getting stuck in patterns, I probably need to shift myself. So that was, you know, there were some really interesting learnings there. One was that, as I say, that I think we have these patterns that repeat themselves, and these challenges are life lessons for us. And that was certainly the case for me. I had to go through a period of doing what was uncomfortable, because it wasn't who I thought I was. And having that realization, actually, what I'm now doing is probably closer to who I really am, but I'm not going to try to define me anymore. I'm going to open up to this idea that there are many aspects to me, and I'm this flowing consciousness that can experience itself in many ways. And you know, what I was aware of, even though there was, you know, there's a the discomfort I felt was a fear, really, was, and that's the kind of ego, isn't it? And that's the idea that the ego is coming from a place of scarcity and wants to hold on to what it knows. And if you deviate from that and threaten that, you initially feel fear, but underneath it just feels right. And I guess that was, again, a crucial challenge, is learning to go beyond those surface level fears and go and follow what is a deeper level pull, an intuitive knowing. And that, I guess that was the thing, is I knew that I needed to change the way I was behaving. I knew I needed to change the way I was dealing with certain people. And that knowing, I think, was closer to who I was than that fear. But all of it, it obviously was part of my experience. So I sought to embrace all of it. But when it came to, right, well, what's the direction I need to go in? It's underneath the sort of surface level emotional feelings to a deeper knowing, a deeper resonance, a deeper intuitive feeling. So I don't know if that answers that question, but that was, it definitely is a tough one, because life has always felt like one challenge after the next. And certainly in this consciousness shift that we're going through now, life just feels like a colossal challenge almost all of the time.
So thanks a lot for sharing your story. But from your story, what is that one major life lesson, maybe in just one sentence, that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I think the major life lesson is be open to the possibility that you are far more than you think you are, and allow yourself to trust your deeper feelings, trust your inner knowings, your intuition. You know, and we've all sort of had that. So I've gone off my one sentence there, haven't I? But that would be it's trust that deeper level of you.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing, Kyle. Really, really appreciate you sharing this story with us from your childhood. You said when you were young, your mom would say that people take advantage of you, and you were a nice person. You wanted to help others. You wanted to please other people. But as a result, at some stage, you found that people were taking advantage of you. You realized that your mother was right when you were young. And that sort of took you on a quest to learn more about yourself, how to find out more about your identity, how to create boundaries and say no when it was needed. But then as you took more action, you realized that maybe you don't really need to define yourself. There are many aspects to you. And as you experience life, as you go on this adventure, you keep these different aspects of your life keep expressing themselves at different stages. So I think that's really profound. And I think many of our listeners are probably going through the same experience as well. Not just having to define themselves, but to really be open to the idea that there is far more to us than we think there is. So I think that's a really profound lesson. Thanks for sharing.
It's an absolute pleasure.
So Action Tribe, if you're listening to this session right now, no matter where you are in space or time, whether you are in the year 2017, 18, 20, or 22 or beyond that, we are sharing a moment. And this is a beautiful thing. I have not met you, but I do know one thing about you, that you are driven by love. You are motivated and inspired by love, which makes you do things to attract more love. And it is the process of attracting love that inspires us to do great things and to reach new destinations. But you know what I'm finding out each and every day? Reaching your vision or your goal isn't a straight line. I wish it was. You have ups and you have downs, you have shortcuts, and you also have issues that delay you. And sometimes you may feel like you've lost all the progress you've made. But just take a deep breath and realize that you are not the only one. Every dreamer goes through this, because with each new day comes a new opportunity and a challenge, and within each challenge is another opportunity. You just need to take time to notice it. What I'm trying to say is that ultimately you will reach your grand vision. You will experience the success that you are longing for, but you will get there at the right time, not a minute before or a minute after. Because if you reach there too soon, sometimes your mind and your body might not be ready for it. Spirit always knows what is right for you. You just need to trust. And as Barbara Hall once said, the path to our destination is not always a straight one. We go down the wrong road, we get lost, we turn back. Maybe it doesn't matter which road we embark on. Maybe what matters is that we embark. So Kyle, as on today, what is your life's calling?
My life's calling is absolutely the work that I do. It's helping people, I guess, like the journey I'm going through myself. It's helping people find who they really are, or unleash who they are. And as I say, it's all about defining that, because I think for all of us that is changing. But I believe that we are going through an unprecedented time of change, an enormous consciousness shift. And I think at this time, I think our physical structure is changing. I think our spiritual selves are changing. My sense is that probably that more of our spiritual essence is going to be encased within the physical structure of the body. So I think more of our DNA is going to come online. And as we go through this shift, people are needing to move from being head-centered to heart-centered. That's often what people say, isn't it? So people are needing to get into that space of feeling and trusting that there is an innate wisdom within them, a soul, whatever you want to call it, that will guide them. So my calling is to help people to that space. What I believe is that it's that when people get ill with many of the conditions that I work with, is that is a sign that they're somehow blocked, they're somehow backed up, and they need a little nudge on the path to allowing themselves to be unleashed, if you will, because there is, as I say, there's a blockage in the flow of who they are. So that in essence, that's my calling. It's unleashing people, you know, as we as a species, as spiritual beings, as we move forward on this planet, as we take it to the next level, we need to be all getting in touch with who we are as individuals and allowing ourselves to flow.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing. And with that, we have arrived at the last round for today, which is called the Wisdom Round. And our listeners know that this round is all about taking notes in taking action. So Kyle, what is the best advice that someone has ever given you on your journey?
Do you know what? I think that a big influence on me was a chap called Steve Rother, who is a channeler based in the States. And when I was young, I was very sensitive, and I knew that. But as a man, I just viewed myself as a colossal pussy as a result of that. And I tried to hide it, and I tried to hide how I felt, that was basically it. But Steve Rother essentially told me he turned it on its head, essentially. He said, my sensitivity was awesome. He said, your sensitivity is awesome. It's a strength. You should embrace it, because it gives you an opportunity. It gives you a good connection with the other side of the veil. It gives you a connection with people, and it helps you do the work you do and make you extremely good at the work you do. And that, I suppose, embracing that part of me rather than sort of shunning that part of me, I think was a catalyst for me really moving forward.
So name one personal habit that keeps you strong.
One personal habit that keeps me strong, going to the gym, lifting weights. That keeps me strong in a number of ways, actually. And it's interesting, and I say that in a slightly joking kind of way, but I, from a kid, I've had a tendency towards having ADD. And so I find that my concentration goes, you know, reasonably easily, and my focus can flip from one thing to the next. But I've found that training at the gym and lifting weights is something that has helped me with discipline and focus. So without doubt, you know, that has definitely kept me strong.
And what is your morning routine like?
Now, my morning routine, it's interesting, really. I am married with two daughters. They're 12 and 14, so they go to school. So I try to keep a morning routine sort of loose-ish, but it's largely based around them. So I get up in the morning, I make them breakfast. Sometimes I cook the breakfast, I make them lunch, and I pack them off to school. I don't really, and then I have coffee. I don't. It's interesting. I know that people like Tim Ferriss talks about the importance of a morning routine, and I think yes, there are certain things that people have that a streamlined process that makes them more effective at the things that they do. But one of the things, I used to work as a psychologist in management consulting, and I found that when I left, I thought I disliked the job, and when I left, I realized I didn't dislike the job, but what I disliked was the fact that I got myself into a rut in terms of a morning routine. I just did the same thing, and I think an awful lot of people do this. So I think there's a big difference between a streamlined routine. If you've decided that and you've felt that and you've seen that something works for you and you do it, I think that's very different from a rut. I think a lot of people get into ruts where they just do the same thing every day. So I've tried having that kind of thing where I get up and I meditate or I get up and I read a bit. You know, I mean, this is after I've put my kids in, you know, on the bus to school. But I found that I tend now to really go with how I feel. So, you know, because I've got that aspect of my morning set up for me, when it comes to anything else, you know, I tend to, you know, there's a number of things I'll do. I'll read, meditate, I'll go straight to my emails, I may go to the gym first thing. So there's a number of things I'll do, but I generally go with how I'm feeling.
Got it. Thanks a lot for sharing. And name one book that you'd like to recommend for someone listening to the show right now.
It's funny because when I was thinking about this earlier, I was looking at my bookshelf and I was thinking, on the journey that I've been through, I've got so many books that mean so much to me, you know, and they've all influenced at certain times. I think one book that's probably sticks in my mind is a book called Change by Paul Watzlawick, and probably because it was the best therapy book that I read, or had the biggest influence on me from that perspective. But it's so difficult. There is, you know, I think every book on my shelf that I'm looking at it now has had, you know, a pretty profound impact at some time. And I always think that because people often say that, is there a book you recommend? And I always have the sense that a book will call you if it's the right time for you to read it. It will call you, because I've got a friend and he sent me books and I haven't read any of them. It hasn't been the right time for me. And I tend not to tell people what to read. I say, you know, these are books that you might want to feel into, but if a book is right for you at a particular time, it will call you.
So Action Tribe, I know how much you love our book recommendations, and I know that many of you get these books as soon as you hear them shared on the show, and that's why audible.com is offering Action Tribe one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can get to check out the service. Now, in case you don't know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your device, including bestsellers like The Chakra System by Anadia Judith, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, and A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. To start listening to your new book rather than just reading, go to my7chakras.com/freebook. Once again, that's my7chakras.com/freebook for your free audiobook. So Kyle, thank you so much for joining me today on today's session. Really enjoyed learning from you, learning your stories, and getting a new take on what stress is all about and how we can cope with it and transform our lives. Before you go, tell us one thing that you're grateful for and also tell us how we can find you online.
Well, thank you very much, AJ, for having me on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. Things that I'm grateful for, well, I'm grateful for almost everything, most days really. I'm particularly grateful for my wife and daughters, so that's probably the biggest thing. Where you can find me, my website is Kyle Davies or kyledavies.net, kyledavies.net. I'm also on Facebook as Kyle Davies EFC, the EFC being for Energy Flow Coaching, and also on Twitter at Kyle L. Davies.
So there you go, Action Tribe. In case you want to learn more, you stuck on so far and you love what was discussed today, then you must go to kyledavies.net, kyledavies.net. We'll have the link up in the show notes as well. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about the intelligent body and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you very much for having me, AJ. It's been a real pleasure.
You're listening to My Seven Chakras. Go to mysevenchakras.com. Download your free gift, get inspired, and take action. Transform your life today.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.